what else does fairness mean in our society? You know, I think a lot it's come to mean punishment. Yeah, you destroyed our World Trade Center, so we're going to destroy you. Okay, we're going to punish you. So it fairness means retribution or retaliation or vengeance, doesn't it? You know, and so that idea of justice or fairness gives us a societally accepted way of venting anger. Yeah, because it's done in the name of justice. So I'm not angry. I'm not vengeful and hateful and spiteful. I'm just being fair and just. You know, they did this awful thing. They deserve to suffer. You know, and we're the ones that determine what they did that's awful. Because awful means you harmed me. Okay, harming somebody else who I don't care about, that's not necessarily awful. But harming me is awful. Okay, and so I'm the one who has become God and can, you know, decide who to punish. Right? Yeah? So, you know, there's not this kind of notion in Buddhism. Yeah? I mean, what else does justice mean in our society? You know, in the penal system, it very often means punishment, doesn't it? You know? We're going to punish somebody. Last week I was, I don't always read the news online. In fact, very seldom do I. But one day I happened to, and they were talking about how this one case is going to the Supreme Court of somebody who, you know, the headline was, you know, kind of a juvenile defendant sentenced to the death penalty, and the case is going to the Supreme Court. Remember, it was in the headlines like last week. As I started to read the story, I'm going, this sounds like Chris Simon. And at the end of the story, they said, if this is about Chris Simon, it's somebody that I know in Missouri, you know. In the when I go to Potosi, it's the maximum security prison. When I lived in Missouri, I would go there a few times and lead retreats. There were these two wonderful Catholic nuns who lead a meditation group that's open to people of all religions because it's just a meditation group. And Chris would go. You know, he's a Christian, very devout. Now, he wasn't at the time he committed the crime when he was 16, but he's done a lot of change, and he's very much admired by the other men in the group, which is, that says something. Anyway, it's about his case, because he was sentenced to death. When I was going to Potosi, he was still on, on death row. And then the Missouri Supreme Court apparently overturned it and said you can't sentence a juvenile to death. And then the state prosecutor took it to the Supreme Court. So I encourage you, to write letters in however way you can in support of Chris, because It would be a great loss, I think, if they killed him or killed anybody for that reason. What I find very interesting about Chris's case, what's going to be interesting, is he looks like the all-American boy. Okay? You know, he's white, blonde hair, blue eyes. Yeah, you know, the all-American football star type looking person. So it's going to be very interesting how the courts deal with this. And, there is a lot of racial prejudice in this country, especially in the penal system. It's really awful. So I think it's going to be real interesting now. And my hope is that they will, you know, the Supreme Court will say, as they did in the case of putting mentally handicapped people to death, that they'll say, similarly with juveniles, they don't have the ability to think clearly. And so they shouldn't be put to death. I mean, I don't think anybody should be put to death. Yeah?
I guess I've heard you talk a little bit about And one part I wanted to hear a little bit more about was about the Buddhist approach toward things like racial inequality, like what you're saying, racial inequality, and sort of that application or of the word justice, not just as far as like retaliation, but as far as like trying to make a more
society where there's not the racial or ethnic discrimination. That is something definitely that would be in harmony with Buddhist principles, you know? Because the whole Buddhist thing is all sentient beings are equal, wanting happiness and not wanting suffering. And so to, you know, make different classes of beings based on their body, no, and saying some are happiness is more worthwhile and some suffering hurts more, you know, that's totally, you know, in opposition to a Buddhist viewpoint of respecting all life, you know, and seeing that everybody has the Buddha potential, you know, and that we're only in the body we're in for a short period of time. Yeah, so you're born to one, you know, ethnic group this life, and, you know, in 100 years, if, you know, we may not all be human, but if we are, we may be in totally different ethnic groups, or racial groups, or religious groups, you know.
He said that he felt that the opportunity that we have now to work for civil rights, for all kinds of human rights issues, animal liberation, all those social action issues, he said he thought that was an unprecedented opportunity to social action.
Very nice. Very nice. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's quite wonderful. He is definitely somebody who's socially aware, not all the, you know, people in every society who's a Buddhist is necessarily socially aware. Yeah. But I think for people who really put Buddhist principles into social practice, that's, yeah, you know, animal rights and human rights and all this kind of stuff. I think we also need to differentiate human rights from capitalism, okay, and human rights from American version of democracy, because if kind of as a country assume that democracy and capitalism are the best systems for the whole world, well, according to different cultures, they aren't. And when you try and make a culture democratic where, you know, people lack education and lack certain things, you know, democracy is not necessarily going to be the most conducive political structure for them. And similarly, capitalism is not necessarily going to be the best system for everybody. So I think we, as Americans, because we tend to think the American way, you know, that means everything that I do, you know, consumerism, materialism, capitalism, we combine these all together in one big pot and think that the world should buy all of it. And I don't agree, you know. Okay, so human rights is one issue, but making countries ready for democracy is a whole other issue. Yeah. I mean, they made Russia more democratic, but when I went there, I've been to Russia a couple of times. The first time was when it was still communist. You never saw people begging in the streets. Second time, after they had democracy, you know, all these poor people, you know, older people and poor people were begging in the streets. Okay, so I don't think enforcing our version of democracy is necessarily good. And I think we also have to look if we're really democratic or if we are run by big business. I should be teaching Buddhism here and not politics, but excuse me if I veer off the topic. But I think there's something to be said if we're, you know, applying social principles just to think, you know. And I'm not saying that every Buddhist has to have the same political opinions. You don't have to all agree with me, even though I'm right. Okay. But, you know, you can be Buddhist and have a variety of different political opinions. But I think it can be very interesting for us to think, you know, how are we going to apply what our spiritual beliefs are to the world and not just have them be nice, idealistic spiritual beliefs, but in our world be, you know, incredible consumers and not care about the effect, you know, of our life on other people. The difference in what faith means between theistic religions and Buddhism, okay? So this is quite an important thing, and it pertains quite a bit to how we do the sadhana, okay? So faith, actually the Tibetan word depa, which is often translated as faith, it can also mean trust or confidence, something, you know, more along that line. Because faith in English, we often think faith means blind faith. We equate faith and blind faith. So in a Buddhist sense, when we use the word faith, we have to understand what the word depa means. You know, the Tibetan word depa, it doesn't mean blind faith. Okay? So in Buddhism, there's three kinds of faith or trust or confidence. Okay? One is admiring confidence, where we admire the qualities of the three jewels. So here we know the qualities of the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Individually, we've studied them, either in the philosophical treatises or in the Lamrim. And knowing those qualities, then we admire them. The next step, that's sometimes also called clear faith. Yeah, sometimes translated as clear faith or lucid faith or admiring faith. Then there's aspiring faith or aspiring confidence. And this is where we aspire to become like the three jewels of refuge. Okay? So the chief jewel that we aspire to become is the Dharma. Okay? The Dharma means the last two noble truths, true cessations and the paths to those. So that's the actual realizations in the mind. That's the real refuge. Okay? The Sangha. As in the Sangha that we take refuge in, is the Sangha that has, you know, non-conceptual direct perception of emptiness, the ultimate truth. And the Buddha is the one who taught the path based on his experience, who has full realization of both ultimate and conventional truth. So we not only admire the qualities of the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, but we aspire to become the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha ourselves, to gain those realizations through practice. And then the third kind of faith is faith based on conviction. And this is faith based on having learned and thought about and contemplated the teachings. So this kind of faith is kind of the opposite of blind faith, because to gain faith that comes through conviction, we have to learn and then we have to think about it. So we don't just take what somebody says for granted, but we think about it and we see, you know, is it reasonable? Is it logical? Does it describe what I see around me? When I practice it, does it work? Okay, so we test it through experience and through reasoning. And through in that way, we develop our own conviction in it. Okay, so from a Buddhist viewpoint, just having blind faith is not very much use, because if we have blind faith, then if somebody comes along and says something else because we haven't learned to think well, then we just follow the new thing that the other person says. Okay? Now, in theistic religions, not everybody has blind faith. I mean, Christianity, I forget which century, but they have, you know, whole polemics about to prove God and things like that. So it's not that blind faith is advocated by everybody. But I think faith may mean something different in theistic religions, where you... you know, some things are inexplicable, so you just kind of believe them because somebody said so, because they're written in a holy scripture, or because they were said by God, or whatever. In Buddhism, in the Kalama Sutra, the Buddha was very clear that we should not believe things just because a holy being said them, or because they're written in scriptures, or because they've been practiced for many generations, or because that's the way everybody else does it. But we believe things because we've tested them and tried them out. Okay? So that means that it's dependent on us. Yeah? And the whole topic of faith is quite an interesting thing. You know, some people come to the Dharma and they're much more devotional. Other people are more analytical. There's room for everybody within the field of Buddhism, you know, because people have different temperaments and different dispositions. So for some people, the devotional practices appeal. For some people, they don't. For some people, the philosophical studies appeal. For some people, they don't. Okay, but regardless of what appeals to us more, we do have to have a certain amount of knowledge that we've not just thought about intellectually, but that we've really checked out deeply within ourselves and tested it. Okay, that's quite important. The whole topic of faith is quite interesting. I remember because among some of the disciples of my teacher, there's a certain element of this incredible devotion, and I remember years ago feeling, you know, gee, I'm not a very good student. I don't have very much faith. I don't walk around saying, oh, my teacher's a Buddha, and, you know, kind of like this all the time. I thought, oh, you know, all of these other disciples, they have so much more faith, and they're, you know, like this. I mean, for me, there was a real heart connection with my teachers. You know, that was always there. But this kind of physically devotional element wasn't present so much, and then it was interesting to see down the line what happened, yeah, and who's still around 20 years down the line, yeah, and I really learned from that sometimes the people who have a lot of emotion and their faith is based on emotion, it's not able to be sustained for a long time, because as soon as the teacher does something that you don't like, thought about the Dharma, and you properly understand what the role of the teacher is in teaching us, then if our teacher says or does something that we don't agree with, our faith in the Dharma doesn't decline. Okay? Because our faith in the Dharma is based on, you know, having practiced and thought about it well. And even in those situations, our faith in our teacher doesn't decline either, because we understand that our teacher's job is not to agree with all of our ideas. And our teachers, as much as, you know, we would like that, and our teacher's job is not to fulfill all of our emotional needs, as much as we would like that, but our teacher's job is to lead us on the path. And sometimes leading us on the path, you know, our teacher has to sometimes be, you know, do some things that, you know, initially we don't sit well with. Like when you're raising a child, you love your child, but you often as a parent do things that your kid doesn't like. And you have to, you know, because if you just try to please your child all the time, you come out with a brat, not with a child. Okay? So it is a similar thing, you know. So faith, I think, has to go on a deeper level of understanding. You know, understanding the Dharma and understanding what our teacher's role is, understanding what the role of the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha are. Because if we don't understand those properly and we just project our Christian thing of, you know, they're going to save me and all I have to do is be like this and then they're going to save me, and save me means that they're going to fulfill all my emotional needs, yeah, then we're going to have a really rough time in our practice. Okay? So, yeah, the whole idea of faith is a little bit different.